Have you ever finished reading a really good story and wished there was more to read? Welcome to Editor's Cut, a podcast where you get the rest of the story. The burnt ends, the icing that sticks to the knife, the extra material which just couldn't make it onto the page. I'm your host, Ryan Kingsley, and today we're dishing on one-stop shops are the new mom and pops.
Angel AI delivers finance on demand. Get decisions on complex real estate financing scenarios with a simple chat message. No more delays or surprises. Just finance on demand at angelai.com.
And we're back. Today, I'm speaking with Sarah Wolick, the author of One-Stop Shops Are the New Mom and Pops. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Your story focuses on people who hold dual licenses, meaning they originate mortgages and they act as real estate agents. Reading your piece, I was surprised at how difficult it can be for dually licensed loan officers and real estate agents to juggle both roles with borrowers. Can you tell me a little bit about why you wrote this story or what drew you to the topic?
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed a lot of buzz on Facebook about originators asking if any fellow loan officers held a real estate license and vice versa. You know, people in the comments replying back if they were a real estate license holder who also originated. And I know from talking with so many loan officers that it's a time-consuming job. So I wanted to learn more about how people had the time to do this. At first, I'll admit I was given some pushback because typically the jack of all trades is a master of none. But I wanted to know why people in the industry wanted or needed both licenses. I was reading these comments and thinking to myself, was there another reason for wanting both licenses? Do people have a preference for one or the other? Just so many questions ran through my mind, and then I started reaching out to people who had commented on the Facebook threads who had said that they're dually licensed.
And what did those people have to say?
So I ended up messaging a few people and ultimately interviewing three of those people. And what I found was that everybody had a different reason for holding these licenses out of the people I talked to. So one guy I talked to named Brandon Matoyer said that when he first started out doing loans, he was really confused because he didn't know what the other side of the transaction was like. It was like the Iron Curtain. So he actually got his real estate license solely for education purposes. And he didn't start actually doing any selling or real estate work until a bit of time after when dual licensure became legal in Colorado, which is where he's from. The other two people I talked to, one of them owns a brokerage, I believe it's in North Carolina. And she kept her real estate license to help the real estate agents working under her kind of navigate the process. And she didn't really elaborate if she had a preference or not. And then the last lady I spoke with, she started out as a real estate agent and she had a background in working for several credit unions and banks. And when the market kind of turned sour last year, she, you know, held on to as long as she could. But in July, she decided to get her loan officer license because at that point, she said she had nothing to lose and it was just another tool to add to her belt.
In general, do you think more real estate agents go for the loan officer licensing or vice versa?
That's so hard to say because the two, it's so hard to make a generalized statement based on the three interviews. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, if we were going to base it off of the people I interviewed, it's 2 out of 3. Mm-hmm. But I don't really know what the sentiment is. That's a good question, though. I mean, I'd be intrigued to learn if one side feels like they could, you know, like when people look at something and say, oh, I could do that job. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering also, like, that's just like another, like a question, I guess, that I don't know. I don't think it can be answered from just like the three interviews, unfortunately. It would be like a fun poll, especially like, you know, in light of the recent news.
Yeah. Something like whose job do you think is easier and get a sentiment survey on something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I imagine having two licenses and working both sides of the same transaction could come with a lot of different rules or compliance risks. Is that the case?
Yeah. Good question. So the main thing is that it's always the customer's choice. So they can work with the person for the entire transaction, either side. So either using the person as an agent or for the loan or none altogether. And the person, I think it differs by state, but the person who has the dual license has to disclose that they have those licenses. And of course there's also marketing service agreements and, RESPA compliance that they have to deal with. All three people I spoke with said there's sort of a stigma about around being dually licensed because people they formerly were referral partners with, so whether they were the real estate agent working with loan officers and vice versa, those people don't really want to be referral sources anymore because they're scared that people with both the ability to originate and to do the real estate side of the transaction will swoop in and step on their toes and tarnish the deal or basically screw over whoever they're working with. So the people I spoke with said they make it abundantly clear that they won't step on anyone's toes. One woman, Jamie Adams, the one who became, she was the real estate agent first and then transitioned to loans. She had been in the financial industry for a while. So she says she still has like those old reliables who send her business. I asked her, could it be more? She said, absolutely. And what I appreciated about that was that she was so honest with her answer.
So then what does the production side of being dually licensed actually look like?
I think that was why I was getting so much pushback for the article, because the woman, Jamie Adams, put it best. She said, you can't churn out 10 to 15 loans a month while having a whole other career because you can't sacrifice part of each job to have the other. You have to still hold the principles and the responsibilities of each side. So she told me that she's by no means a millionaire, but she has that ability, which is unique, to ramp up her loan business or real estate business depending on the market's demand at the moment. And so she said it's a good option for people who want a different stream of income. So it's definitely something to consider before, you know, jumping the gun and diversifying your business just for the fun of it.
Did any of the folks you talked to discuss the difficulty around getting licensed on either side?
No, I mean, they made it sound pretty quick. Like the guy, Brandon Matoyer, who I talked to, he said it was super simple. Like he just took the test for almost the education and the fun of it. It was simple. He said it helped that he had already known one side of what the transaction was like. But he said he felt more secure if he knew like the big picture and how to explain it to the customers who may, you know, probably don't have that license realistically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the wake of, you know, a recent National Association of Realtors commission lawsuit settlement, I've heard, as I'm sure you have, that dual licensing is gaining more traction as some buyer's agents are potentially going to lose their jobs or at least have less business on account of some restructuring there on the real estate agent side. Of course, that settlement is pending a judge's approval, but I wonder what trends or changes do you anticipate in the practice of dual licensing moving forward?
Yeah, that's been definitely a topic in not just even the news, but in, you know, agencies and the business as well. Just a few weeks ago, Bob Brokesmith from the NBA said that dual licensing is creating new opportunities for LOs and agents to consider. So if the settlement goes through, it'll likely create an opening for this type of business model. Brokesmith said that one of the models could be that lenders license their loan officers as real estate agents and offer the buying agent service for less than the 3% fixed fee point. And think about referrals. I mean, 50% of referrals to an LO come from buyer's agents. So with those impending changes that could take place as early as this July, homebuyers not represented by an agent might start going directly to listing agents, which then creates a whole new dynamic of who you want as your referral partner.
Mm-hmm. And I could also see those buyer's agents maybe wanting to leverage some of that market experience into trying to get into loan origination.
Mm-hmm.
That seems really tricky, though, because they have very different, both different experience bases and different backgrounds in relationships with the borrower.
Yeah.
What are one or two things that surprised you as you were researching the story?
When I was researching the story, I wasn't sure that I would get didn't realize I would get pushback on it at first because I thought it was kind of remarkable that these people chose to have dual licenses. But I understand that it's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, you get the experience of having both sides of the transaction, but you also have to sacrifice maybe the tenacity that you're putting into both of those careers. You can't be that high production loan officer, but you also can't be there, you know, at your customer's beck and call as their real estate agent. Something that surprised me while I was writing the piece was when I interviewed Brandon, He was talking about referral partners because I asked him if he was having a hard time at all. And I was like, well, you could always go to your tried and true, which is friends and family. But he told me that those are the last people he goes to. He said something along the lines of that it's hard for the people that you grew up with or that saw you grow up to see you as an adult or a businessman, because in their eyes, they still see you as that kind of kid or that childhood buddy. Maybe they, you know, just don't take you seriously. And I thought that was a new perspective to consider, since the first thing people will say about referral partners is to look to your immediate circle and your network. But I guess it's also a testament that reputation matters, whether you're an LO, a real estate agent, or now both.
Did any of the other folks you talked to bring up really specific challenges like that?
Jamie Adams, she kind of mentioned that when she had these like long-term referral partners, she said that when she transitioned to being a loan officer, that she was met with almost an uneasiness. People weren't trusting that she wasn't going to step on their toes, and she had to kind of rely on them judging her character to see if they would work with her. She said she got the sense that people thought she was going to like swoop in and be evil and take the deals and, you know, cut corners or something like that. So she fully admitted, like, yeah, I could have more referral partners than I already do, but it's hard to craft that reputation for people that don't know you, especially if people might be saying like, oh, don't work with them. They're dual licensed, or, you know, I feel like they all just kind of mentioned a little bit. They didn't say anything derogatory, but they hinted that there's a stigma towards those that aren't putting their all into one side of the, you know, the choice, whether they're putting their all into being a LO or putting their all into being an agent.
Do you think it's possible, if there is an uptick in dual licensing in the wake of the National Association of Realtors settlement, there's a chance bringing more buyer agents on board and then having maybe it not work out could undermine those long built referral relationships, which, you know, LOs actually, you know, spend a lot of time nurturing and taking care of because it's such a deep relationship.
Mm-hmm. I've been thinking of that too. And we write a lot here about how LOs can fine tune those referral partners, what different approaches they can take to stand out. Like, I mean, we talk to coaches all the time and what they advise to do. People, you know, always offer their two cents on how to keep that referral partner. But if that changes, then doesn't the approach change? Or like, will those referral partners of the past feel like they're in the dust because a new referral partner takes precedence? You know, they get that important, you know, special treatment. And I think that has to do with an LO's individual character and maybe their preference on whether that partnership still brings them value or whether they bring value to the partnership. I think there's an opportunity for that to happen. I wouldn't like to see any referral partnership be undermined, but I think that, you know, the settlement, whether it comes to fruition or not, is going to change a lot of things.
Yeah. And like you mentioned before about borrowers perhaps going straight to the listing agent, that again just is a big dynamic shift where the buyer agents could see market share move away from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good point.
Thank you, Sarah, for sharing these extra perspectives on the topic. Listeners, that's all for today's episode of Editor's Cut. If you've enjoyed hearing the rest of the story we just couldn't fit on the page, please be so kind as to leave a review, or better yet, subscribe, then leave a review. You can find us wherever you find your podcast. We like bringing you stories, and we always want to bring you behind the scenes on better ones. Visit nationalmortgageprofessional.com for more stories and backroom interviews like the one you heard today with Sarah Wolak. I'm Ryan Kingsley, and you're listening to Editor's Cut. Until next time.